Thanks for joining Smart Cherry's Thoughts. This is Sai Charan Paloju. You can call me Sai. Please visit www.smartcherriesthoughts.com.
Hey, it's Dan Melnick. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Zing, and I'm proud to be a sponsor of this podcast. So please check us out today as we can help fuel your business growth. MyZing.io. Thank you.
Great. Carlos, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you very much for accepting my invitation and accepting to be on my show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. I think this is really great what you're doing. I saw a couple of your other videos, and I think that they're really good. And you're definitely bringing a lot of interesting guests. So I was excited when you sent me the message, and I was like, yeah, sure, that's it.
So I've seen your profile. I can see you are doing a lot of work. So I thought to tell about your work to my audience.
Mm-hmm.
So can you please introduce yourself to my audience?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Carlos. Currently, I am the founder and I guess I could consider myself the chief executive officer of my startup, which is Helios Nexus. I also have another startup that's currently in stealth mode. That one's going to take a little bit more time to prepare, and that one is called Hyperspace. I'll touch a little bit more on that. But I'm from the United States, from the East Coast of North Carolina. My background is pretty much sales, marketing, not really when it comes to software or hardware. So those are skills that I had to learn later on. I'm actually the son of immigrant parents. So I think that's something that's really important to note, mainly because that's one of the things that really drives me. So I'm sure that you'll see in my Instagram profile and a lot of the things that I post that it really revolves around being a dreamer, right? Trying to push the boundaries of what's been known or what has been achieved in the sense of breaking those chains of being held down by, oh, you came from this place or you're this type of person, you can't do that. So that's really important to note. Another thing that I think is really important to know is my fascination for space, but it can be really easy to assume that I'm already involved in it or that I've been involved in space for a long time, but really it's something that just kind of started to slowly progress as I got more and more in touch with people in the industry. So I'm an ordinary person, just like you and everybody else. I just happen to put myself in a lot of situations that require a lot of work. I'll touch a little bit more on my startups. So like I had mentioned, I'm the founder and CEO of Helios Nexus. We're actually attempting to make solar energy accessible to more people. And the way that we're doing that is by bringing down the cost of solar panel systems. Unfortunately, the biggest problem when it comes for homeowners to go solar is that there's a high cost of entry due to commissions or salespeople. And not a lot of people are happy when people knock at the door and are selling them a solar panel system, but then feel like they're being pushed into buying something that they don't necessarily know about. So our solution is simple. We just we provide software. We're actually building a software where customers get instant designs, they get the ability to build their own system, and we can bring the cost down by 47%. So it's actually same quality systems, same quality product, but just at a transparent pricing. And you know, the goal with this is not so much that we become a solar company, but that we become a software company that just happens to sell solar, so that we learn more about how to actually maximize panel placement. And of course, I'm sure that you follow Elon Musk and seen some of his talks. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that he mentioned that Mars missions are going to be happening very, very soon in the near future. But there's also going to be a necessity for infrastructure, whether that's for food, transportation, or energy. I believe that solar energy is going to be necessary. So if we can start by understanding the market a little bit more, getting customers, learning from our customers, and then investing in developing systems that could potentially, hypothetically speaking, work on the moon or Mars, then that'd be great. But that's a story for another day. Hyperspace. Hyperspace is an interesting concept. Oftentimes you'll hear people come out with different ideas as to what they want to work on. And these are ideas that you'll say, "Oh, I've heard about that before," or "That sounds really cool. You know, I know one company that's doing that." Well, hyperspace was a little bit different. I was actually working at Amazon. I was working 6 days, 12-hour shifts at night. I might have been sleep deprived when I thought about this. But like I had mentioned to you, I had only recently gotten into the aerospace into the space industry after meeting a couple of members down in Florida of the I-24 group. And we'll touch on that too. But really, the idea of hyperspace was to look into utilizing suborbital rockets to transport cargo from one place on Earth to another, which is point-to-point transportation. Now, obviously, that's not an easy thing to do, and especially if you don't have a technical background. So we're taking our time with that one. We do have some very talented engineers who are helping us with building this case study and building small MVPs such as landing legs, structural systems, and also just on the business side of things, is being able to go out there and get LOIs, letters of interest or letters of intent from potential customers. But the rocket's one third of the problem, and that's just a whole nother rabbit hole of its own. But hyperspace is still in the stealth mode. I'm positive and I'm optimistic that within a couple of years, we'll start to actually start doing hands-on hardware. And that would be pretty cool to see. But we'll see how that goes. First, Helios Nexus needs to be successful. And then third, I'm actually the founder, one of the original founders of a nonprofit, but which I'm sure you know of, of a nonprofit named the Inspire 24. And our focus with that group is to build a community of space positive people and of people from all walks of life who at some point were interested in space, are curious about learning about it, but maybe feel like their background isn't necessarily a background that would be acceptable in the sector. And this really this was an idea that was conceived by our president, Andrew Paris, and whose call sign is Risk, and we all have call signs. So if you hear me say call sign, it's because we all have call signs. It's just part of the tradition. Whose call sign is Titan? I'm sorry, I said Risk. But we were down at the Cape for the Inspiration 4 launch, and when we were at the Cape, you know, we looked around the room and we're like, wow, these people that are the people that are here come from different walks of life. Some of them have worked in NASA, some of them have worked in the hospitality industry, sales, some of them are freelancers, you know, some of them are students. But the vibe was just there, right? We met up for a dinner before the launch, and then after the launch, you know, we all sitting in touch and you know, slowly over time, we just couldn't stop messaging each other. It's like every day, like send a message to him, send a message to her. And the idea of starting a official group was born. And you know, we decided that it would make more sense to go the nonprofit route, because we truly do want to inspire people. But I have a couple more stories for you that came out of that. But I am the chief executive director of I-24. So that's another thing about me. And I'm also a student pilot. So, yeah.
So, as a keen follower of Elon Musk, and who is actually reason for the podcast that I'm doing since last 4 years, I can clearly understand the project that you are doing. It can be the first project that you are doing, and the second project which is related to space. Your inspiration I can understand because hyperspeed, it's hyperspace. So I can clearly understand you have took inspiration from him and doing projects which is useful. It can be with the solar energy, taking inspiration from Mars project, and it can be the rocket idea. So can I say can you tell a little bit about your motivation to start actually these projects? What is the reason?
Well, hopefully we don't get too deep or personal here. But I think that the number one reason for why I decided to pursue these things was because, well, number one, I do not do well when I'm part of a group or a company or a job that doesn't have a long-term goal. And I realized this during my first few years when I was in the workforce. I've had multiple different jobs. I mean, I think I've had way over 10 different jobs, from fast food to sales to truck driver to, I mean, it's all over the place. And every time that I would work at these different jobs, I would always ask myself and my leaders, where do we want to take this? What is the next step? Is there room for growth? And oftentimes what I would find was that, yes, there would be room for growth, but I felt that I wanted to be a part of something that was taking on bigger risk, something that was taking on a bigger goal, something that was bigger than the company itself. So a bigger mission. And I just couldn't find that. And then the second thing was that I wanted to be, quote unquote, an entrepreneur, right? I wanted to be a business owner. I wanted to be able to say, yeah, like I'm the one who's starting this. And then you slowly start getting into that, and then you realize that you're working more hours than anybody else. And then it's like, why would anybody want to do this? being able to dictate a little bit more as to what gets done, what projects to take on, definitely gave me the motivation to do it. My background is definitely one of those things. As I had mentioned to you previously, I do have DACA. So for those of you that don't know what DACA is, essentially it's a permit that you're given in order to go to school, to study, or to work. If you came into the United States at a young age, and you came to the country legally. One of those things is, it's not your fault as a child to come to another country and then of course having to deal with different immigration laws and all that fun stuff. I mean, if you're 5 years old, you have no idea what's going on. But then slowly over time, as you grow up, you start to realize that things around you are a little bit different. People have different opportunities. People might have access to different options, such as getting something as simple as getting a driver's license. And then you ask yourself the question, why? And then you find out why. But given that that was my upbringing and that that was one of the things I had to go through, I did encounter a lot of people who would tell me to look for a secure path, whether it was to just get a degree, get a job as a lawyer, as a doctor, which are great careers, and I'm very thankful for lawyers and doctors. I think we need a lot more doctors. But the idea of dreaming big and of dreaming of these crazy, audacious goals would quickly be dismissed. Unfortunately, in the Hispanic community, in the Latino community, if you want to be an astronaut, if you want to be an engineer, if you want to be someone who is going to push the boundaries of what's known, oftentimes, because you're first generation in a new country, your parents don't want you to take that risk. They want what's best for you. So that was a motivator because I thought, you know what, I do want to do something big. I do want to take my chance here, and I feel that if I fail now, I can get back on my feet later on. And if anything, these are life skills that you can learn. So being able to prove that, regardless of your background, you can achieve these things, or you can at least make an attempt to, definitely motivates me. And then another, and the last thing that really motivates me a lot is doing something that's going to impact more people when I'm no longer here. I think that oftentimes the goal is, for a lot of entrepreneurs, is money oriented. And if you take a look at different startups, if you take a look at different business owners who go into the industry, whatever industry it is, with the mindset of, I want to get rich, right? I want to get rich. I want to have infinite amounts of money, and I don't want to ever worry about it. That's great. But when times get hard, that's not enough passion for you to be fueled to keep going. Because it can make it so easy for you to just throw the towel and say, you know what, let me go do something else that's going to make me more money. For me, the being able to do something that's going to impact people when I'm no longer here, especially when we talk about where the world is going in terms of sustainability, it's a motivator, knowing that we can slowly push the needle of the adoption of solar. Even if it's one customer a month, that's still one customer that we push to go renewable. And whether we make a huge contribution to that or whether we just are a small business later on and it's just selling solar systems, that's fine. But it's something that benefits everyone involved, the company, the customer, the environment. So that's what motivates me. It's doing something bigger than myself, something that's gonna benefit a lot more people, and something that will hopefully inspire others. I think that seeing people in the space sector, such as Musk, and then and current present times, right? Looking at Tim Ellis from Relativity Space, who decided to 3D print rockets, and people thought he was crazy. It's really inspiring, and they are standing on the shoulders of giants. And I think that it's our responsibility as a new generation to at least try to do something that's just as crazy or as groundbreaking as well. So, yeah.
So when you started this solar energy company and how many customers you have and how many employees you have?
Yeah, so for context, I think it's important to note when I started getting into the solar industry, I started off as a sales rep. So my job was pretty simple. It was go door to door canvassing, knocking on these doors, talking to homeowners, educating them on the product. And I'll tell you a funny story about this. I thought I was doing great, and the reason why I thought I was doing great was because I would talk to a lot of customers and I would get a lot of appointments. The job, the model was get an appointment, have somebody go in there, close a deal, you get paid. So I had a lot of appointments and I thought that I was doing really well. And I later came to find out that while I was being ethical and while I was being upfront and honest about this, the closers, the salespeople, would oftentimes mislead the customer or try to sell a product for a lot more than what it was really worth. So this would really cause a really awkward and uncomfortable experience for for the homeowner themselves. And while I was at that first company, I was able to get two sales as a sales rep. I didn't last long. I believe I was there for 2 weeks. And then slowly after that, shortly after that, I decided to join another company. And after I joined that company, I was able to get four customers who actually needed some really big systems. So that was really helpful. But this time it was different. This time I was able to sit down with the closers, with the salespeople, and really know what's going on. And then right after that, I figured, well, geez, these systems are really expensive. And I asked my manager, can you walk me through this? And Sure enough, he walked me through it, and it was, this is how much the system costs, this is how much our commission is, and this is how much you can add on top of that, and this is what the customer pays. And I said, hold on, wait a minute, slow down. So this is the total cost, and then with fees and everything included, you have this price point. How did we get to this price? And that's because of the sales commission. And I went online, did a little bit of research, and I saw that the complaints of homeowners complaining from door knockers or people who were selling at the door had actually grown by, if I'm not mistaken, I believe from 2018 to 2023 last year, by over 1,118%. That's a huge growth in complaints of door knocking. So I figured, okay, cool. Well, maybe we can try this a different way. And sure enough, I went online, tried the software out, trying to automate things, right? And I found that I did have that there was two companies doing this, and that they were actually helping out a lot of homeowners without having to pressure them into buying systems, just giving them a little bit more control and transparency. And so with that being something that I looked at and learned about, I decided to form Helios Nexus. And Helios Nexus was born. And we've been in development for the past 2 months. And we currently have seven customers that are pretty much on standby for our MVP so that we can go ahead and have them be fulfilled through our proprietary platform. And I'm optimistic that we'll continue that consistency. We just don't want to do things that scale, because if we do things that scale, then the product is never really going to be ready. We're always going to have some form of pushback. Oh, this is not ready. This is not perfect. We need to be ready to take in 100 customers a week, right? But so far we only have seven. So currently we have seven customers. But the team that I have, they've been in the industry for quite some time. So they understand everything from engineering to design to installation, financing, and just really being able to have a good understanding of the industry itself is really helpful. So I like to see myself more as the vision of the business or the company, although I do dive in into all these different areas. But sometimes when times get hard, you need somebody that can push you and say, look, this is why we're doing this. So yes, that's currently where we're at.
So you want to scale it?
Yes, the goal with Helios Nexus is to so currently, excuse me. So currently there's 4% of homes in America have solar. So it's not a lot. And like I had mentioned to you earlier, the problem is not so much the technology. The technology is there. The problem is the high cost of entry. So our goal is to be able to utilize scales of economy. Economies of scale, sorry. And utilize this to be able to not only fulfill more customers, but also to build up our customer base so that we can do this in another state outside of North Carolina. We want to focus on North Carolina first. Then we want to take it all over the East Coast, and then eventually some to the West Coast. And once we learn more about the market, once we learn more about what it takes to be able to scale efficiently, try to scale it at a nationwide level. Now, with Helios, we do have a master plan, which is pretty funny. We like to poke at it. But the master plan consists of different phases. And the first phase is just that, to be able to get a larger number of homes. We have a target of 1,000 homes to go solar. After achieving that milestone, we want to look into proprietary technology. So whether that's battery packs or solar panel manufacturing, because then at that point we have more of a vertical integration, and we can lower the cost again through economies of scale. And then one of the crazy ideas that I had a while back was after there was a breakthrough from Caltech University, where, and don't quote me on this, I believe it was Caltech, they were actually able to beam down energy from space. In the form of microwave frequencies. And I looked into this, and I read about it, and then I found out that this was an idea that has been around for years. space-based solar systems. But then, of course, you can make the argument, well, we don't need space-based solar systems, we just need more efficient batteries. But I like to be on the risk side of things. So I would really like for us to move in the direction where we can explore space-based systems, not only because it's one of the things that has been talked about in the past years, but there's also a huge advantage to having a system like that in areas of natural disaster. And it would kind of go hand in hand with hyperspace. So hyperspace being point-to-point transportation could help with natural disasters, humanitarian aid. Well, if you could have some form of technology that could receive these frequencies, right? Receive the space-based power without the infrastructure laid out, maybe in the form of a generator, who knows? Then you can provide energy to people in remote areas. So that's one of the areas that I've thought about. Of course, that would come later down the line. Our first phase, of course, is being able to get more homes to transition to solar.
So how this system works?
I'm sorry?
How this system works that you have created?
How does this
Solar
work?
energy system. Yeah, this system, the entire system would work.
Yeah, so for
And
our solar.
how it is useful for customers using solar energy.
Yeah, sure. So that's a great question. So understanding how solar works is really one of the biggest areas where there's a lot of misinformation that comes in. It's actually it works very, very simple. A lot of customers that we have talked to, they really saw solar as more as a gimmick in a way, where it was, oh, it's not going to produce enough energy. The way that we actually go about it is that we look at a customer's electric usage. We look at the history of how much energy they actually use throughout a year. What are the trends? Does it go up? Does it go down? By how much? And then what we do is we actually go into our inventory database, and based on the design of the system, of how big the roof is, how much panels can it actually accommodate, factors such as is there trees around the house? If so, does the shade obstruct it? And what does the ideal layout look like? And then we do a simulation for that for the year itself. So okay, this is where the sun passes. This is how much each panel is going to be hit by the sun and generate. And based off of this, we get a calculation. And that calculation tells us how much energy is going to be produced, either monthly or yearly. And our goal is to always get it at 100%. It's very rare for homes to get it at 100%, within if they don't have a lot of the square footage on the roof. And in some states, there are programs where if a home can produce more energy by this plant on top of their house, that they can send it back to the grid, to the electric company, and then get paid for sending that excess energy to them. But customers can benefit a lot from net metering programs. So, like I had mentioned to you, selling the energy back to the grid. They can also benefit from lower costs, monthly costs. Basically, it's a bill swap. So, rather than paying your electric company, say a flux a bill an average bill of $120, and it having fluctuating up, fluctuating down. You can opt in for a fixed rate. That's that with us, it's actually lower. Some companies out there that are independent contractors that just do the sale, because of the commission that's in there, you're going to be paying around the same thing, if not a little bit more. And unfortunately, when you do pay a little bit more with solar, it's usually because they sold it as, well, wouldn't you rather pay more for something that you know is going to be yours later on? And it's like, well, yeah, but I'm paying more. But customers get a lower bill. It's always going to be fixed for whatever term they get on their loans. And also, if customers decide to get a battery pack, in case of a power outage, you have some backup energy stored, so that way you don't have to be in the dark during those power outages. Batteries are expensive, however, so it's always one of those things that we tell our customers, batteries are great, they are still a little bit expensive, but you really have to look at it from the perspective of would you rather be on the safe side, or does the amount of times that you had a power outage before justify getting the battery now? And you know, there's also incentives from the government. So getting a tax credit, not a lot of people know that you can get 30% tax credit on your systems. And then there's always different incentives coming out if you do go with a battery, for example. For commercial customers, there's grants. So there's a lot of different benefits when it comes to going solar. And of course, it's pretty cool too. So, yeah.
So, how much actually a customer is going to pay for the material that you are going to give? And also, what is the difference that this system that you are offering is different from already the existing system? So, how it will be useful, and what exactly the problem that you are solving?
Okay, so the problem in that we're trying to solve here is number one, and I feel like I have to unpack this question a little bit more and provide some context. So the current business model when it comes to selling solar is a dealer model. So let's take a look at Ford. So Ford is a dealership, and then you have independent owners who are licensed with Ford, and they sell the cars for a profit. Well, what happened with Tesla? Tesla came in and they wiped out all the dealerships. They said, we're not going to have a dealership. We're going to have centers where customers can ask questions. They can place an order directly, but they don't have to pay a commission. We're trying to apply the same model here. And the reason for that is because there's a growing demand for solar energy, for renewable energy. And unfortunately, solar hasn't grown out from the old school door-to-door high pressure sales tactics that it's been known for. So the problem that we're solving here is customers getting misinformation. Oftentimes, if somebody sells solar at your door, not everyone, but majority of the reps that are there went through little or no training other than basic terms of a system and walking you through the sale. So this means that you as a customer, are you 100% sure that your questions are being answered, number one, truthfully, and number two, correctly? And so we eliminate that by having an actual engineer or a solar representative on our team that you can talk to and ask these technical questions to. Number two is customers on average get anywhere from five to six different quotes for solar. These five to six different quotes can range in a difference from $2,000 each to $6,000, some of them up to even $10,000 apart. So this means that there has to be a reason for this gap, and that gap is a commission-based system, in fees and upsells and all that fun stuff. So not only does it make solar a little bit harder to get, but you're also causing a lot of there's a lack of trust there because now they don't know who to go, who to trust, who to talk to. So we eliminate those high costs by taking out the salesperson. So if a system costs you $10,000 and you use a dealership model, well, a salesperson might upsell you $5,000. So now you're paying $15,000. In some cases, I've seen it gone up $18,000. As opposed to us, we're giving you the transparent pricing of the materials, the installation, the insurance that we provide. And then, of course, we have a small markup, but our markup is nowhere near those commission-based price points. So misinformation, one of them, the high cost of entry due to commissions, and then number three has to do with lack of quality control. Customers right now who go solar, like I had mentioned to you earlier, from 2018 to 2023, there's been a 1,118% increase in complaints. And these complaints are a mix of at the door when they're knocking on your door unsolicited, or number two, after the systems have been installed. And there's a reason for that. Companies that are selling door to door usually are 1099 contractors, and it's sales, so they go through people quickly. People burn out, representatives get tired of it, they move on to the next thing, or they do grow within the company. Unfortunately, the customer's left in the dusk, in the dark, in the dust. I can't even talk to them. I haven't had my coffee. But after the sale is done, these customers are then handed off to the parent company, such as a Palmetto, a Sunrun, a Power, these big solar providers. So now you have a transition. So now the customer goes from, hey, I was talking to Carlos, right? He's the one who helped me out to the sale. To now I gotta talk to Andrew, who works at the company that I'm gonna be making my payments to, or the company that I'm going to have them install it. And there can be a little bit of miscommunication there. So there's a lot of different channels of communication, but there's also a lack of quality control because how do you enforce that sales reps are treating customers the right way, that are having them onboard correctly? And then number three is when it comes to installation, a lot of these contractors are not all licensed to do what they need to be doing. So those are the problems that we're trying to solve. Through our solution, through our platform, customers get access to instant designs, instant proposals. They plug in their information. They see exactly what they need. They can actually order the system. And we're taking a very similar approach to what Tesla did, which was by having a deposit done. So a customer can place a simple deposit, and then what we do is pretty much look over the design, make sure that everything looks good. And if it does, we then talk to the customer, and we can move on to either getting them finance, or if they're doing cash, taking that payment. And we walk them through the steps of, this is what it's going to look like for installation. These are the documents they need to sign. And then what we're trying to do a little bit different here is have customers have access to their own tracking. So when I was in the industry of door knocking, I was the one who had to communicate with my customers. And we had mentioned before, there's a big burnout rate when it comes to sales. So if that customer no longer gets updates from the sales rep, where are they getting these updates from? And if they get them from the provider, oftentimes their customer service is very, very small, so they can't cater to all of the customers. So they get either late response or they just don't know what's going on until the day of. So by having better customer service, by having an immediate access to where your project is in the journey of going solar and lower costs, we're confident that we'll provide a better experience for customers. Now, you did ask a good question, and I want to answer that question of the equipment because I think this is really important to know. A lot of the equipment that's being sold, most customers believe that it's by the provider itself. So let's take an example. Let's take Palmetto Solar. Someone might think, oh, well, I'm getting Palmetto solar panels. That's not true. These companies actually get them outsourced, right? They get them manufactured and distributed. So we take a, sim a similar we take the same approach. Helios Nexus doesn't have its own unique panel. I think later on that would be pretty cool, because then we can dictate, what specs we want on it. And who knows? Actually, we might look into that. We'll see. We got to get through baby step one first. But we are confident in what we sell because we know that our partners can offer us some of the best panels out there. They can offer us good tier A, tier 1 systems that we know are gonna last, that are gonna be efficient, but are not gonna give a customer headaches when it comes to electrical or just small little defects from the factory, because we know that where they're coming from, it's an established factory, it's an established manufacturer. Battery packs as well. There's different types of makes and models. It's just like in cars. But we only go for products that have been proven that are being used out in the market for now. Later on, we would like to look into different providers. But the equipment is the exact same equipment you would get with another company. We're just coming in at nearly a 50% reduction. And that 50% reduction stems from our ability to cater to a customer without having to do sales on the ground, which is door to door, cold calling, and all that fun stuff. So we want to make it a fun, pleasing experience. We don't want to pressure customers to do it right away, and we don't want to pressure anybody by being at the door. But there is a downside to it. And the downside to us utilizing this approach is that, you don't push people to go that way. However, we want to think long term. So yes, we're providing the solution, and yes, we already have seven customers in the pipeline. But we're confident that as the demand for this continues to grow, we can be one of those providers where, next time somebody thinks about solar, they think, you know what, let me go with Helios first to see what the prices are. Let me consult with them. Let me go ahead and get my quote and compare it to what people are offering me. Because sometimes people like to buy from other people, and that's total human nature. So there's pros and cons to it. I like to focus more on the long-term positive outcome, which is we reduce the cost. And because we're a startup, we can afford to not chase commissions. We can afford to not go out and look for a lower cost of entry because we're a startup. We found a way to make money off of this model. And at the same time, we are able to grow as a company, but customers get access to systems that, number one, are necessary, and number two, are for the price that they should be being priced for, not ridiculous numbers. I'll give you an example about pricing. We currently are making a design and are going to be scheduling out a install for a customer. He got quoted for a system somewhere in the range of $33,000. We had a conversation. We looked over his energy consumption, and we actually came in at $18,000. And his mind was blown. He was like, "What?" And I was like, "Well, yeah. And on top of that, we're getting you better equipment." And of course, we broke it down with him, and we saw just how much the gap in commission was. And yeah, it was. It's insane. There's a lot of room for improvement in solar. There's no regulation. Anybody can go sell solar. Just apply, get a 1099, learn the basic terms, and you're off you go. Door knock, canvas, sit somebody down. That's it, you're done. But the damage from that is a lot bigger because solar's already kind of one of those things. Are you familiar with crossing the chasm?
No.
Okay. So there's when new technology or new products come out, usually you have your early adopters, skeptics, general
Yeah.
population, right? So solar is in the right currently it's in the stage where it's starting to gain more traction. The problem is through door-to-door sales, right, through outdated methods of selling systems, and getting all these different numbers and misinformation, it only makes it worse for solar because then they do think it's a scam. So that's what we're trying to avoid. That's what we want to change. Oftentimes you hear the word, you got to find market product fit, and that is currently what we're trying to do now. But like I mentioned to you earlier, I do have two competitors. There's a third one in there, but I don't consider them a competitor, mainly because they're using our approach, a similar approach that we're taking, but it's a gimmick. So you got to be very, very, very cautious of that. But my other two competitors, and I applaud them and respect them for this, they've actually been able to accelerate the adoption without having to necessarily have salespeople. There are a few things that they could be doing better, though, such as customer service, the actual fulfillment process, and of course the response time and their software. But those are I won't get in too into it because that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to put our software together where it's an improvement from those two. But I'm positive and I'm confident. Like I mentioned to you earlier, 4% of homes have solar, so there's a lot of room for opportunity and a lot of room for growth.
So, your service is for houses or can be useful for companies or stores or industries?
Yeah, so currently we're only focusing on residential. We did have a potential commercial deal come up recently for a solar farm, but our focus is primarily on residential only at the moment. And this goes back to, the point that I had made earlier, which is do things that don't scale. And I've actually learned this from, I'm sure you're familiar with Y Combinator. If you're not, they're an accelerator based out of the Bay Area, I believe, and they have really great pieces of information. They've been able to accelerate a lot of different startups. But one piece of advice I really took from some of their content was do things that don't scale. And as much as I would like for us to start building a system where we can take on both residential and commercial, we're not there yet. And if anything, we would be doing a disservice to ourselves because then we can't focus on one customer, which is residential. So, for now, just residential. Later on, eventually, we'll do commercial.
And what's your future plans, like in coming days, what you want to do with this?
So definitely, I see myself attempting to make this company either go public someday. That's my long-term goal, is to take a company public. I'd like for us to get to a point where we're consistently putting out anywhere from 50 to 100 systems monthly. I think that would be a really great achievement. If we can put our product out there, iterate, I'd like for us to move into the direction of manufacturing. I think that manufacturing is underrated. It's a very complicated thing to get into and to do. But the benefits of doing so are great. Number one, you can manufacture your own product. You can have a much tighter control as to the cost. And then of course it gives it the ability to have even greater economies of scale if done correctly. So that's where I would really like for the company to go to. Long term, if we're talking about the next 10, 15 years, this is only a stepping stone. I believe that the technology will get better over time. I'd like for us to really start looking into how we can utilize this on the moon or Mars and really being able to contribute to the space industry. Just because, rockets are cool. A lot of people want to do rockets. We already have a bunch of those. And I think that there's different applications in which a lot of opportunity exists. And I think that in the renewable energy segment of that, there is opportunity. So it's something that I think we'll end up leading into later on. I'm curious to see how that evolves. The idea is there. I just, it's like with any startup, the idea is there, but the idea will change, or the approach will change. So, that's kind of the goal with that. Now, in terms of hyperspace, if we want to talk about where I see myself in the future, with hyperspace, that one's an interesting one. That one's really fun. So, hyperspace is interesting. Ideally, what I would like for us to be able to do within the next 3 to 4 years is to actually have a functional prototype. And having a prototype that can do a demonstration of a simple hop, but with a payload, and showing how our quick loading and unloading system would work. It also, I mean, at this point, you're testing out engines, landing legs, guidance, all that fun stuff. So, I'd like for us to have our first prototype working, fully functional, and then scale from that. In terms of myself, I definitely want to get my pilot's license. I'm halfway there. I have 20 hours underneath for my private pilot. But really start participating more in analog missions. I was at the Chase training in Arizona very recently, and that was phenomenal. That was great. It really motivated me to start getting a little bit more involved in different activities, such as my crewmates and I started talking about scuba certifications. And then just the possibilities of doing more things opening up. So I'm probably going to be doing a lot of those stuff. And then, really growing the I-24 group. As you know, we're at 142 members now, so we're growing. But being able to put new activities, new opportunities, adding new value propositions to I-24 so we can bring in more people. So there's a lot of different goals, a lot of different things that I want to do. But yeah.
And when your websites will be out?
So right now we're targeting, so because it is our proprietary software and we already have customers. Originally I wanted us to be able to have it on the second week of May, on May 15th. We're pushing to get it done a little bit faster, so I would say by May 5th we should have it live. So Cinco de
Okay.
Mayo. And that would be great, a great celebration party.
Great. So you are right now you're providing the service in your place, in your area.
Yes, so our main location is North Carolina. As we understand it a little bit more and we're able to learn from our customers as to what works, what doesn't work, what makes it easier on them and what makes it easier on us. We can streamline it and then figure out a system that works efficiently. And then once we get to that point, we'll start scaling it towards taking that to South Carolina, Virginia, Florida, Georgia, different states. Our main focus right now is really just focusing in on the North Carolina market because we know more about this market than anyone out there, than any other market out there. So, yes, for the meantime, North Carolina, later on, we'll continue to scale to other states.
Tell me about your team. It can be a technical team or people who are working actually on the equipment.
Yeah, sure. So, when I started this, the main thing that I was looking for was for people who had a positive mindset. And that can be very vague, because you could have somebody who's like having a tough day, like, oh, I'm very positive about it. But positive mindset in the sense of, we're going through a lot right now, so we need to figure out solutions, and then having them say, okay, let's try this, let's try that. My technical team, I mean, they're great. They're phenomenal. In order for me to be able to communicate with them, I really had to dig in into that portion of the startup, which was understanding back end, front end, and how all that works. They currently are in UNC Chapel Hill. Some of them are in NC State, and then some of them have already graduated. So they really are knowledgeable when it comes to what they're building. And it surprises me when I think of something like, hey, what if we try this? And then they're like, okay, cool, let's break it down. And they unpack it. And then it's like, well, first we need to look into this portion. Then this goes into this and this goes into that. And it just trickles down. So I really had to get a little bit more educated on that. So I actually taught myself how to program and how to code. So now I can have those conversations and I can say, well, this is what we need to do. These are our variables. This is the functions we need. This is what we need to do in the back end. Or let's look at this. Let's take an approach of X, Y, and Z. So my technical team is really talented. I like to tell them all the time, like, look, I'm not here to give you specific like instructions. It's the team has really started to take the approach of what is the problem and what is it that we would like to do. And then let's come up with multiple different solutions to that. Oftentimes, one of the things that they've told me and that I've looked into and really looked into was that technical teams often get approached by non-technical who say, we have this specific problem and we need this specific solution. But that kills the creativity. and that kills the motivation to want to try new things. So there's this great book called Ask Your Developer, and I recommend that book for anyone who's non-technical because it really helps you communicate with your team at a deeper level. They'll get upset sometimes because it's like, wow, this is a lot of work. But at the same time, they believe in the vision, they believe in the dream. So I mean, this is truthfully like really bootstrap. So you have to put in a lot of work. The hands-on installation team, they're great. They have years of experience, so they've been in the industry for more than 15 years. They know exactly how to get up on that roof, install your system in pretty much less than 2 3 hours, and making sure that everything operates well. But they also are able to provide feedback as to, this is the way in which things have been done in the past. Maybe we can work on making these things more efficient or this process more efficient. So having that hands-on installation team re is really helpful because you don't really get that from outsourcing it to somebody else. And then of course, I gotta give a shout out to one of my business development team members. He's really been doing a lot that he wasn't comfortable with. And this is a great example of real world versus school in college, right? So in school you learn all these technical terms, you go through all of these different perfect scenarios that I like to call them. And then in the real world, you get punched in the face with everything that's anything but perfect. It's like, oh, like that's not how it's supposed to happen. And so, he's really helped me out a lot with approaching new not only new customers, but new partnerships and suppliers. So I can't really get much into that, but being able to establish these connections that he didn't even think these were possible. And just being able to put yourself in those uncomfortable situations or places really opens up the door because then you can share what you're doing, gain some traction, and then eventually gain a partnership or relationship with other companies or with other people. So, the team is great. You can't do it all alone. I used to be the person who wanted to do it all. Like, let me do this, let me do that, let me do, and it doesn't work. Because, it's just you need to be able to delegate the task, and it's hard, but the team is great. This definitely cannot happen without the technical team or the installation team, the business development team. They're all a piece of the puzzle.
And what is the size of your company?
I'm sorry?
What is the size? What is the size of your company?
Size of the company? Currently,
Yeah.
so internal, and this accounts for technical, so the coding software and all that fun stuff, and then with me included in the business development ops, we're at four team members. And then when it comes to the installation side, where we have three members who do handle the installation and the permitting and all that fun stuff. So that's kind of how we separate it, just so that we don't get mixed up. But total, we're at seven.
Great. As a founder, as a visionary, as a person who is into space technology and also who is into solar energy and also who is also thinking about the project that should be there even if after you, these projects should be there. That's your intention. So what's
Yes.
your obs yeah. So as a visionary, what's your observation about my work? Have you seen any videos of mine on YouTube?
I think your work is really it's great. Not only does it, so I took the time to look at the videos, right? And I went on your site and I was like, okay, let me take a look at to you know what's here, and I found a lot of what I like to describe. Let's see. I'm trying to put it into words. It's a wide network, so you're able to hear from different people, and they open your eyes to a solution that you might have not thought about, or a new idea, or something to build on. I think that something like that is really necessary because you got to remember that we all live within our own little world, right? which is, what is it I'm doing? How can I do this? And then you meet someone, you talk to them, you interact, and then it's like, oh, okay, cool. That's great. I learned something new. But then you go back to being in your own world. And I think that having access to a platform or having access to content like the one that you're putting up now really helps you expand that network. It really helps you expand what you know, what you thought you knew, right? And ended up being wrong. And really feed into your brain, feed into your motivation, feeding into your idea and creativity. So I think it's really great. I was, like I said, I was excited to come on here because I saw that you had a couple of people in there who were sharing like some really valuable information. I was like, wow, that's super cool. So I'd like to ask you the question, which is, what's your long-term vision?
So with this project, with this network that I'm creating, I want to give the humanity, like, if there are other species and other parts of the universe, if they want something to know about this world or this planet, I want them to know through this project, like a UK person or a European or a Indian or a Japanese, like different kind of people and who belongs to different industries and also who belongs to different backgrounds. And mainly I belong to technology. I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science and engineering. So that's my, and also right now I'm working for a UK company as a DevOps engineer and a software engineer and software developer. So I'm working for them remotely from India. So that's my full-time role. So apart from this, I'm interviewing founders and business leaders and startup owners, industry leaders, like technology company leaders from US, everywhere, trying to understand how they are solving problems. It can be business problems or it can be a technical problems. I'm trying to explore by asking different kind of questions related to their subject, trying to understand how they are able to do it, and trying to learn from them. So with this network, what I just want to tell and give the information to the world, at the same time I want to learn. Both are happening in the same time.
Absolutely. And that's great. It's great that you're taking that approach because there's a need for this. And you can learn a lot from a book. But learning a lot from reading books is not for everyone. Not everybody enjoys reading a book, which is fine. And I enjoy podcasts. I know that there's a lot of people who enjoy it too. So it's really good for people who want to expand what they know, right? They want to expand their knowledge. They want to learn more about the world. But also, you're giving them the opportunity to meet people who they wouldn't see, who they believe they wouldn't have the opportunity to meet themselves. And that can be scary. Someone can say, I could learn a lot from that person, but I don't know. Like, what if they say no? Or like, what if I get, what if I get turned down? But you're giving them that opportunity. You're giving them that ability to be able to learn from these people, from these individuals. So I think it's great. I look at it like a vault, like a library. Let me tap into the library and pull out information and see what I can learn. So I appreciate what you do. I think it's really great. It's definitely something that's needed.
And what's your fa why you are so much fascinated about the space and rockets? And I can see you took a lot of pictures at SpaceX.
Yeah. So it really started when I was I've always really been fascinated by aviation. When I was younger, when I was in high school, I really wanted to go into the Air Force. I wanted to enlist, and I had hopes of becoming an officer, going to college, becoming an officer, and eventually becoming a fighter pilot, because fighter jets were always like my favorite thing in the world. And this goes back to me having DACA. So I applied, I put in my information, and then when it came to putting in my social security number, they're like, I was like, hey, I'm done with my application. And the recruiter goes, well, where's your social? And I was like, well, I don't have one. And he goes, "Well, you can't enlist." So I'm thinking, "This is crazy. Like, this sucks." And you know, that's when I found out that I didn't have a legal status. And then, of course, that made me realize, wow, okay, there's a lot of things here that I really can't not do, that I'm limited to. And I'm very thankful that I got the opportunity to get a permit to be able to work, to be able to study, to be able to go to school, learn, right, drive, license, all that fun stuff. And by the time I wanted to enlist, I found out that they weren't allowing DACA recipients to go to the military. So now I'm like, so now I have it, but now I can't go. So that kind of messed up my plans for after school, because that's really what I wanted to do graduating high school. And I got into the workforce, and the reason why I'm going through all this, it'll make sense later on, but got into the workforce and didn't really know what I was doing with my life, right? I felt a little bit lost. I always saw people who were passionate about things, right? They were passionate about art, passionate about music, passionate about archaeology, like all these different things. I'm like, what am I passionate about? And I kept getting frustrated by it. Well, I moved from North Carolina to Florida when I was 21. I was 20. And I moved down there with my roommate Matt Taylor, and we were working on a startup on an app that he has. And that was a great experience. And during that time, I was working at Amazon, six days a week, night shift, all that fun stuff. Do not recommend that. That was horrible. But I was in the Space Coast, you know. I was down in Florida, where action happens, you know, where the rockets lift off. And he would tell me, yeah, you know, my family and I, we see rockets, you know, we used to see it all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. I'm not really too interested. Well, it wasn't until the Inspiration 4 mission rolled around. And, you know, that's when I really started to get a little bit more involved. Inspiration 4 came out with their commercial for their ad for the seats for Our Prosperity and Generosity. And I applied because well, I'm an entrepreneur. Number two, you know, it would be pretty funny. Like, this is literally how I said it. I was like, it would be pretty funny if I get the chance to go to space when I couldn't become a pilot, a fighter pilot, right? And I applied. And spoiler alert, I didn't get selected, so here. But when that happened, I got invited, and along so did the others, by Shift 4 to view the launch. And leading up to that, I started doing research. And I was like, oh wow, okay, so this isn't NASA. Like, NASA's not launching the Inspiration 4. I thought it was NASA. And then I learned about SpaceX. And then I learned about Blue Origin, all these private companies. And I started researching, you know, the backstories. How did this company start? I didn't know you could start a rocket company. I didn't know that you could get into this business. Then I learned about, you know, all these other companies that are dealing in hardware, like rovers and moon landers and all that fun stuff. And that really got me interested. I got intrigued. And leading up to the launch, the day of the launch itself, you know, we're sitting there on the viewing area, and when the rocket lit up, something in me changed. And I know it sounds cliché to say, but I was different after this. But something changed in the way that I saw space. And I don't know if it had to do with me knowing that I had applied to be on that rocket itself, me believing that I had a chance, or having that sense of connection with the crew, because this crew was literally really different. I mean, the connection that they had with the public was big. You know, I saw it lift off, and as it was going up, I just got emotional. I actually cried during the launch, and it was at first I didn't like admitting that, but then afterwards I own it now, right? It's like, yeah, I cried when the rocket went up. But I didn't know why I was crying. I didn't know. I was just like, why am I crying? Like, look at this go up. Well, I left that launch, and I was blown away. And I did more digging, I did more digging, and then, you know, I learned about all these crazy goals and ideas of going to Mars, of going to the moon, and I started reading science fiction, and I started looking into the point-to-point transportation concept, because I thought to myself, you know, if the point-to-point, if the suborbital technology is already there, why can't we utilize it for this? And that led me down another rabbit hole. And really, I think what it comes down to is I have a belief that we have the how can I describe it? That we're meant in a way to be among the stars, that is home. And the reason why I believe that is because I've heard from people who go up to the ISS, who've gone up to space, that they feel this sense of calm, that they feel the sense of being in a place where they belong. And it's almost like as if we were designed to be able to look back on Earth and appreciate what it's like. And this goes back to the worldview, to the overview effect. I'm sorry. Worldview, overview. I confuse them both sometimes. But having that overview effect and seeing that the Earth is just one small speck in this giant galaxy, yet at the same time, it's a big deal because that's where we are. And I think that being able to contribute to that, I think that being able to inspiring someone to take on such a big audacious dream and goal really, really fuels me and really gets me passionate. But the one thing that really seals the deal for me is the people. I have not met, and this is something that Titan and I talk about all the time, and you know he brings it up all the time too, which is he hasn't met someone who's not negative, that's in the space sector, unless you know they're in the space sector, but to talk crap about it. And the community is really great. Our community in I-24, they're all there to help each other. They're all there to support each other. And you know the space community, it's really filled with talented people, with inspirational people, and we're all working for something that's bigger towards something that's bigger than ourselves. And I think that that shows a lot as to the type of people that are involved. And it's really motivating. It's really inspiring. And who knows? Maybe one day I get to go to space, or maybe I don't. But it's definitely worth the try. So, yeah.
And I interviewed a couple of experts from NASA.
How did you feel when you were interviewing them?
I asked great questions. When you have time, I want you to watch it because I asked completely a curious question that I used to have from my childhood. What do you find in the space? How do you feel when you went there?
Yeah.
How was that feeling? The childish questions, like a kid, you know, the questions that will be there, like very curious questions I was able to
Yeah.
ask, and he was feeling very happy to give the answers. So a couple of experts, so that was
Definitely gonna have to check those out. Yeah.
that's a lifetime achievement for me because I interview people who are working on the planet, but I wanted to also interview experts who are working about the planet. So I wanted to know like what kind of a technology that they are using
Yeah.
in order to reach the distance. What is that space technology? Like how we are able to travel from from down to up. So I was
Yeah.
trying to explore, and he said about International Space Station, said about Antarctica. I asked like how was that? So asked many questions regarding Mars and also moon. So
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a
there's I mean the again space technology really has helped life here on Earth. You often hear people say, why focus on space? Why not focus on Earth? Well, a lot of the technology that's utilized in space has out ha you can apply it down here. So, and you'll notice that as you start to dig in deeper into the space industry, that there's a lot more companies that are utilizing space technology for Earth purposes, which is great because I agree that we shouldn't neglect being home on Earth, and utilizing that technology is really going to help us get one step closer to, number one, becoming sustainable, and then also expanding. So yeah, I mean it's fascinating. It's definitely interesting. There's a lot to learn. lot of exciting stuff coming out soon from a lot of different private companies. So I think that we're very fortunate to be living in this age of the new space exploration.
And as a founder, as a visionary, what is your observation about Elon Musk? It can be Tesla or it can be SpaceX, Hyperloop or Neuralink.
That's a great question. I think that he has good intentions. He's definitely someone who strongly believes in his purpose and his vision. I think that if he were to focus specifically on the companies that he's running, that it would make people a little bit more excited like they used to. I think that with the acquisition of Twitter, now X, it's really caused him to either to steer him in a direction where he's focusing on a lot of issues such as political issues. And that can be very that can be rough waters to navigate. But aside from that, I think that SpaceX has been one of the companies that will inspire many to come. I mean, when you think about the Dream Team, SpaceX has one of the best teams in the world. I mean, they're designing landing systems, they're designing life support systems. I mean, the team is just it's great, it's phenomenal. You know, they're some of the best of the best. When it comes to Tesla, they really push to change an industry that they didn't see change for many years, and prove that by taking a different approach and sticking to the mission, that there's ways to make it work. And you know, Tesla is one of the companies that you know a lot of people. It's a car company, but it's really a software company. It's a technology company. And then of course you have Neuralink, which is helping patients. And you can have a lot of people say, oh, you know, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? Which are valid points. However, there's not a lot of people doing that. And I think that that's the one thing that stands out is that, you know, there should be more risk-taking. There should be more people who are willing to try to do these crazy, audacious things. But I think that, you know, I read the biography by Walter Isaacson on Elon Musk. I'm not sure if you read it. Have you read it?
I saw the video.
Yeah. Well, whenever you get a chance, dig into the biography. It really goes in deep into as to why he is who he is and how he's able to get that motivation. But I think that you can try to do these big things without necessarily having to take Elon's approach. And you know, Elon's Elon. He's you know, he likes to be laser focused on his work, and I think it's a good thing. I think that he's going to be talked about years from now, after he's long gone. And I think that you know, if he's successful with getting us to different celestial bodies, that it's really going to be those moments that bring out a new leader, a new company that revolutionizes the world, or at that point, you know, the universe. So, he's definitely one of my heroes. But you know, I do see flaws in some of the things that he does, which is, you know, dabbling in very sensitive topics. I do think that freedom of speech is one thing that he has definitely helped protect and bring back. But he tends to get in a lot of trouble. So, but yeah, other than that, I think that I think he's doing a lot of good. He's doing a lot of good, but no one's perfect. So, yeah.
And now tell me about your vision with your projects.
Yeah, so I definitely would like to see ourselves being one of the most reputable and trustworthy companies when it comes to going solar. I'd like for us to be able to gain a big portion of market share, and not so much from a monetary standpoint, but more from a from the standpoint of if we can do what we want to do correctly, then we're helping push renewable energy. And I think that if we can become successful at that, then gaining market share is a direct reflection of our hard work and you know being able to offer adequate systems for people with a lower cost of entry. I really would like to be able to have Hyperspace become a company that proves that we can utilize point to point on Earth. The rocket's one third of the problem. When you look into the point to point industry, you have space law, regulation, environmental, ITAR, you have all these different crazy things. But I think that aside from all of that, if there is a way to provide humanitarian aid to areas of natural disasters, or even just in the commercial aspect of things, it would really change the way in which we live our day-to-day lives. And you know, there's with e-commerce being a thing now, it's and you know, same day one day, same day deliveries, it's only expected to grow more, and the demand is going to continue to rise. I think that if we can provide a solution to that, it will change the way in which people live, and eventually, and this is the thing, I wouldn't want to focus on human transport just yet, because it's very risky. But eventually, I think that if I'd like for this company, for Hyperspace, to, if it's not the company that makes point to point become a reality, that at least it's the company that inspires the next one to make it a reality. You know, I had a conversation with a close friend of mine recently, and we were talking about hyperspace, and you know, he was telling me about how he wished that there was a faster way to get to where his parents were living, because they're a little bit older, and if something were to happen to them, what happens if he's given a call and he says, you know, you only have a few hours to get here, you know, they're in critical condition, and then you get on the plane. You got boarding, landing, take off, boarding, land, you know, landing and all that fun stuff. And how, you know, time is precious. So, I really would like for us to be able to provide us a way to utilize this technology, apply it here on Earth and potentially on Mars or the moon. You know, we have rovers, which is great, but I could see there being an application for, you know, for a vehicle like this to be used there as well. So, yeah, I think it would be really useful. It's just time will tell.
Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Yeah, sure.
And
Absolutely.
also, can
Oh.
I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
Most definitely, absolutely. Here's another thing I wanted to share with you, if you don't mind. So, going back to the Inspiration 4 mission, one of the things that I don't talk a lot about is that this is funny, right? So I just recently read the book The Alchemist. If you haven't read it, I recommend that you read it. And it basically says that once you make the decision of pursuing your personal legend, which is your mission, you know, making the choice, this is what I want to do, the universe tends to help you, right? It tends to guide you in the direction. It tends to throw things at you. Well, at that time, I was like, you know, I really want to get into it. Like, this is really interesting. Like, I'm at Kennedy Space Center. I'm looking at the rockets. I'm looking at the space shuttle Atlantis. I'm looking at all these different things. And it was time to line up to go to the viewing area. And it was my roommate and I, and we're standing in line. And right in front of us, there's an older gentleman, and he was a little weird at first. you know, we're having a conversation, and my friend is he, him and I get along very, very well because we will qu both question each other. Like he'll says, did we land on the moon? And I'll say, yes, we did. And he'll say, well, how come this? How come that? And we just went at it. And we're talking about something with the dragon capsule. And this older gentleman decides to step in into our conversation. And he goes, well, I hope that capsule is safe. It really is safe. And you know, that nothing happens. And we're like, well, why do why do you say that? He goes, well, there's people on board, dummy. I was like, oh yeah, right. But you know, he starts saying, and plus my babies are on there. So I look at him and I'm like, what do you mean your babies? Like, we're just a little confused. But he didn't answer us. He just went back to doing his own thing. So we're in line. This gentleman's in front of us. He just said his babies are on the capsule. We have no idea what he's talking about. We get to the viewing area and, you know, we're waiting for propellant load and all that fun stuff. And, you know, he starts telling me, he's like, my carnivorous plant seeds are on that capsule. And I look at him like, seriously? He goes, yes. He goes, I own a carnivorous plant business, a nursery, and I'm doing research. I want to see how the seeds interact when they're in low Earth orbit. So I'm thinking, wow, this is crazy. And you know, sure enough, rocket launches, and I could hear him in the background of my video, like saying, go, baby, go, you know, please, like, come on, keep going. And you know, they did their orbit. They were up there for 3 days. They came back from and they did splashdown and all that fun stuff. And then a while later, I get a phone call because we exchanged information. And he goes, hey, what's your address? I want to send you something. And you know, I give him my address and we talked for a little bit. And I had told him before that I wanted to, if I could buy a seed or if I could buy a carnivorous plant from him, but just a regular one. Well, he sends me something in the mail. And when the mail comes in, it says fragile, and I open it up, and sure enough, there was a carnivorous plant that had grown from seeds that were in orbit around the world for 3 days, and it had a little plaque that said Inspiration 4, and then it had the scientific name of the plant. So that was really fascinating, and I was like, this is unbelievable. I actually have a space flown carnivorous plant, you know, like the seed was up there in space. And when I went to see the Artemis launch, I ran into Dr. Simon Proctor and Mike Mongo, and I asked her the question. I said, hey, do you remember having any type of experiments with carnivorous plants on board? And her eyes just lit up. She said, what? She's like, how do you know about that? And I was like, I actually had one. And we had a great conversation about it, and she was surprised that I knew about the carnivorous plants because this was something that was an onboard experiment. But it, you know, I thought back after reading this book, I'm like, wow, like all these things, if like eventually make sense of the puzzles, they're a piece of the puzzle. So it was great. And actually, I'm gonna post a picture of the carnivorous plant on my Instagram now, so you can see it. That was really cool. It was really fun.
Great. Thank you again for giving me opportunity to interview you and sharing your experiences and sharing about your work with my audience, Carlos.
Thank you for the opportunity. You know, I really enjoyed our time and I look forward to more.
Yeah, I'll let you know once I publish it.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Thank you very much again. Keep going, keep inspiring people like this.
Thank you. Likewise.
Bye.